Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Ray Martin is often called the Mr. Nice Guy of Australian television, and it's a tag that he's proud of. He says that chasing people down the street with a camera or the unannounced walk-in are rude at best and bullying at worst. And apart from deploring that as an affront to civility, he also believes they're lazy journalism. Ray's career included time as the ABC's New York correspondent at 60 Minutes and, of course, the long-term host of The Midday Show on Channel 9. Now out of the daily grind of journalism, Ray Martin has been able to spend more time on a long-held secret passion, which is photography. He's taken photos for years and uses a very small, basic camera, gathering shots on assignment, on holidays, or wherever he has a chance. Somewhere on an outback tour with Ken Duncan, Ray Martin was convinced to have an exhibition of his works during July 2017 at the Erina Heights Gallery of Ken Duncan. It was a pleasure to welcome Ray Martin to Open House.
Thanks, Steve, very much indeed.
You're a storyteller, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I guess that's my sin in life is whether I take photographs or whether I'm doing television or doing radio. It is about stories, and I love listening to stories and I love telling stories. So if that's my crime, I plead guilty.
Well, so stories can be good and bad, and you've told your fair share of both over the years, haven't you?
Yeah, I have, and in fact, it's interesting. Someone was saying to me today that, you know, how do people react? And I said the most common, and I think you would have got this in media and also in politics, that the most common refrain I get from ordinary people who meet me as strangers is, why is there so much negative news on television? Yeah. Why are the stories, whether you're doing news or a current affair or 60 Minutes or Four Corners, why is it always so bad? Why is it always about people who, you know, are basically reprehensible or mongrels? I think it's a fair comment, because we tend to live in a society which is not filled with those sorts of people. We like our next door neighbours. We love our family. We don't see pain and too much gore. And yet the media, radio and television, especially newspapers, are, you know, dominated by the negative stories. And I think it's a valid comment, even though we clearly can't walk away from the news.
Well, you have the knack. You do have the knack of telling the difficult stories in a way that's credible, and we can believe you, and we know you're trying to educate us, and you've got a sense of there's a better world to be had. If I summed up how I would sort of, you know, my image of you, if I picture you in my mind telling me a story on the telly, it's that picture, that there's a better world to be had if we could get through to the truth of a matter. Do you lament that there's precious little of that type of journalism around today?
I don't know whether I lament it. I guess it's the reality of, I lament the gossip journalism,
yes,
that is around, that is, you know, part of social media especially. I could have been talking to someone of the Labor Party as well. Mm. And Joe Hockey was saying, look, when he was treasurer, look, if I try and tell a serious story about what we're trying to do with the budget, to journalists, they turn away, and
that's
they just
true.
Want to run with the fact that I've had my stomach stitched or whatever it might be, and that's the truth. I mean, the journalist friends tend to ignore that story, which is, if you like, too much detail, or too much, it's not sensational enough. And I'm a defender of journalism. I think generally, if you bother to, even with online service, if you bother to read your papers and read anything you like, from the New York Times to the Telegraph, it doesn't matter. As long if you listen to radio and watch television across the broad range and read newspapers, you can be well informed. I don't think it's any excuse to say that the journalists are just serving up trash. They're not, if you bother to go looking for it. So it's there, and my kids are better informed than I was in my 20s.
Oh, no, I'm very much the same, and it's too easy to just criticise, condemn, but I always feel very sorry for working journalists these days. The industry is not what it was at one stage. It's not two old blokes.
Oh, I agree, and I feel, oddly enough, I know there's a couple of grandfathers talking, it sounds like, doesn't, but I feel it for politicians, and I almost bite my tongue when I say it, but for politicians to try and get a fair go,
yes,
it doesn't matter which political party these days, is very hard, because there's 24-hour news service, for example, just means that every time they cough or sneeze, sneeze, there's a camera. Every time they pick their nose, there's a camera. And that's all those human things that people do are suddenly accentuated and suddenly become the norm. Whereas the old days of, you know, where someone work, you or I working out of Canberra, working out of Macquarie Street, there'd be certain rules that you don't cross the boundary unless there's a reason to do it. I think there are no boundaries anymore. The boundaries are simply just open-ended. And if you can, if someone can be made to look like a fool, well, that's the case. And we know that, you know, generally, they're not fools, generally.
That's true. Well, now, Ray Martin, we come to you because you're a practiced photographer and a real artist when it comes to the visual image, and yet most of us wouldn't have known that until just recently. Why is that?
I guess, Stephen, I guess I was a closet photographer, I like to call myself. I used to find on television that I've taken the camera almost with me since I started journalism 50-plus years ago, and I've taken photographs, but cameramen and producers tend to say, put the damn camera down, or we can, you know, you're there to tell the story, not take photographs. And so I felt very, if you like, embarrassed or sheepish about doing it. And until about 10 years ago, I guess working with Ken Duncan and going on trips with Ken Duncan, he gave me the confidence to actually say, well, hang on, I take photographs as well as writing stories. In fact, I probably get more pleasure out of taking photographs than I even do out of writing, which has been my career. So now I have no hesitation. But all those incredible people, you know, from the Audrey Hepburns to the, you know, the Bill Clintons, or the Nelson Mandelas that whom I interviewed and met over the years, I never took a photograph.
Seriously?
Well, in the last 10 years, I've tried to correct that, and I've come out of the closet in taking photographs, and I do it, you know, without hesitation.
As I look at your images, which I'm doing now on a screen, and I would love to see them in person at the gallery, Ken Duncan Gallery, I'm still seeing a sharp eye for the story. And I think that's really, when I look at someone's work, I look for what they're trying to tell me in the work. Are you, when you're taking photographs, especially because you're a journalist, are you looking for the story?
Every time. Every time. And that's, in some cases, I hope it's not, but it may be a cop-out. But you know, my photographs may not be, certainly are not as good as Ken's, and yet there's a story behind every photograph I've taken, because I am a journalist, and I tend to, so often I won't have the exhibition, but when we do the conversation hour or so with people who come into the gallery, I get a chance to show. I've got a series of photos, for example, I took in Vietnam, and it's an old man. I was there with the Fred Hollows Foundation. They were fixing some cataracts. And this old man was about 83, and he'd gone in to have his blind cataract eyes corrected, and he really thought that going blind was just part of growing old. And he was a rice farmer from just out in the central Vietnam. Anyway, the people who'd been trained by Fred Hollows fixed his eyes, and we took him back to his house, and his wife was there, who's about 80 as well. She was you know, a little perplexed to see this circus come out of a small bus. There was the surgeon, a Vietnamese surgeon, a couple of his offsiders, Fred Hollows' son Cam and his wife, a couple of people for the Hollows Foundation, the 60 Minutes crew, all piling out of the bus plus her husband.
Like that happens every day in Vietnam.
Exactly. And normally you wouldn't have gone. He'd have stayed in the hospital for an extra few days, but because we needed the photo, the filming, we took him back to his house. And so I took a photograph of her at the top of the driveway, sort of looking at this circus piling out of the bus, and then the old man, the crew came up, and I took a shot of them with her, and then she reached forward and she couldn't quite touch his eyes because she didn't expect a miracle, and she sort of reached forward and almost touched his cheek, and then she realized that he could see, and she touched his forehead, and then the next photograph actually had her sort of silently clapping her hands to her God in sort of gratitude, if you like, about this miracle that had happened. And the next one is the two of them together with her betel nut stained teeth as she smiled, and he smiled as well, and they then walked off into the house. And so you need the five photographs to tell the story, and none of them is an award-winning photograph, but together as a story, it was one of those miracles that you suddenly turn on the lights and turn on life for someone who's been blind for 16 years in the space of just 15 minutes. And $25 in Australia is enough to pay for one of these people to have a miracle occur, and to be there when it all happened, and to see her acted out out before my camera was just wonderful to do.
I don't think you should undersell the quality of your images, by the way. Please stop doing that. But I hope Ken Duncan's told you the same thing. But the story you're telling there is a story of redemption. It's one of the great stories. It must be the greatest story ever told. And I know that you share a religious faith with Ken Duncan, for instance. Do the two of you, what's it like when you're just out in the outback and just thinking about the eternal, looking up at those amazing stars that we can't see in Sydney or Brisbane or wherever because of the visual pollution? But are you looking for the redemptive in your work as he does?
Well, I must say that I've travelled with Ken, and I enjoy the conversations. And Ken is not, as he's the first to say, he's reluctant to be a Bible basher in this sense that he has deep faith and he doesn't need to beat people around the head with the Bible. But nevertheless, if you're out somewhere like in the Andes and you've seen the most glorious sunrise you've ever seen, or you're in Australia and you've seen the most glorious sunset, it's very hard to think that it just happened naturally. That's what the world's about, and so I'm quite happy to listen to Ken talk about it, and he will say, he'll then talk about his faith, and he'll talk about this incredible world that we live in, whether we're in Australia or somewhere else, and I enjoy the conversation, I enjoy talking to you about it, and I'm not arrogant enough to suggest that the Jesuit priests I've met over the years, or Malcolm Muggeridge, I once had a conversation with. Muggeridge is one of the most intelligent people I've ever impressed. People I'd ever met in my life, and he was in his 80s, and he was spending his life studying the old manuscripts, the old biblical manuscripts, and he said to me that the more he studied, the more questions he asked, the more devout he became in his faith, and that sort of thing. So I'm, you'd be an arrogant man or woman to say, well, he's a fool, there's no such thing, when you're that intelligent, that perceptive as he is, and I think Ken is the same. Ken is such a strong believer in his faith that to dismiss it is the height of arrogance, and also it's an interesting discussion. So we quite often wander through the back blocks of this world, and he'll be, and I do mostly listening, to Ken, and I'm pleased to talk about it. But if you go to some of these places, you'd like to think there's some superior being that's helped create these places, because they're beyond description and beyond my photographs. They're just exquisite.
Well, the exhibition starts on the 14th of July. It runs till the 23rd. It's at the Ken Duncan Gallery in Erina Heights, and I hope and pray it goes really well for you. Ray, thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks, Stephen. Terrific. And lovely to talk to you again, as always.